Thanks for tuning into RCR, Reality Check Radio. The following interview contains topics that some listeners may find disturbing. Listener discretion is advised. If you would like to contact us in regards to any of our content, please email us at inbox@realitycheck.radio. That's inbox@realitycheck.radio. This is Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Tuesdays and Thursdays from 10 a.m.
You're on Reality Check Radio. It's Real Talk with Rodney Hyde. Oh, my goodness. You can send us a text at 2057. You can email me at inbox@realitycheck.radio. One of the more disturbing cases, and you get a few coming through your door when you're a constituent MP, concerned a young man who noticed it very difficult in life to get jobs, get work, and he had applied to get into the police and had never got there. And it turned out that at that time, this was in the 90s, maybe early 2000s, but in the 90s, the police were operating what's called an information noting system, where they just noted, you know, something suspicious. And it was initially in notebooks, but then it got computerized and any police could dial it up. Interestingly, it's not on your police file, but you can ask for what's held on you by the then information noting system. And what had happened was this young man was a babysitting in the neighborhood when he was like 16. And he babysat for a baby. Right, the baby was in the cot. And at that time, there was an American grandmother visiting from America. And remember, there was all this alarm about one in four kids were molested as children, and it just got way out of hand. And it turned out this grandmother complained to the police that this young man had molested the baby. And the police turned up to interview him, took him in with his father and interviewed him, and realized that there was sort of nothing there, I think. Plus the mother had now gone back to the States, and there it rested. And this guy literally forgot all about it. But subsequently, his career struggled and he couldn't understand it because he kept getting denied opportunities. Like, for example, he was denied entry into the police. And he and his father finally figured it out because anyone asking for a background check would be told not to employ him, because he was suspected to be a paedophile. I've got to tell you, I struggled even a bit myself looking into his case, because you hear the word paedophile and you run a mile, right? And the more they explain to you that they're not, the more you think, oh, could be a paedophile, right? Because I don't know what a paedophile looks like or behaves. But in the event, I took his case on to find out what happened, and eventually it was removed from the police noting system. Now, bear in mind, he'd never been charged. Yes, he'd been questioned, but no big deal. So small a deal, in a funny way, they forgot all about it. I don't even know if they were taken to the police station now that I think about it. And it was just decided that the grandmother was overhyped. We've got a 10-year veteran of the police who also got caught up in something similar. This thing somehow became called the red stamp system. And we're talking with Brian Mullane, who was 10 years a police officer. Good morning, Brian.
Good morning, Rodney.
Thank you for your service as a police officer.
Thank you.
Because not everyone can run towards danger. We tend to want to run away with it, run away from it. But a policeman, a fireman, first aider, soldier, sailor, airman, your job is to run towards the danger, isn't it?
Yes, that's for sure.
And stop it. You know what I mean? I mean, it's a big deal. Complete strangers, and you have to be prepared to sacrifice your health and safety on behalf of complete strangers, members of the public, sometimes who themselves you may be wondering, why am I doing this? Because this person isn't exactly a great citizen, but you do it because that's your job.
Yeah, that's for sure.
And I want to thank you for that and all the police officers. Now, you left the police force and then you got tangled up in this red stamp business where, through bizarre circumstances, you get red stamped and you being you, you're like a dog with a bone, and you put a considerable effort, 10 years, I believe, into researching this to find out how the hell could this happen. And you discovered at least 200 other people who had been similarly afflicted, oftentimes with dire circumstances. Can you walk us through this red stamp business and how it affects people?
Yeah, the police have a system called the National Intelligence Application, which is their recording of all interactions, really, not just complaints or convictions. It's when you have an interaction with a police officer or someone else who's gone to the police complaining about your behaviour or something you may have done or said, which is really then only hearsay. It's not fact, because no one has investigated, but it goes on your record and it stays there and can be dragged off at any time and used against you.
What's the name of the system, Dave?
The red stamp warning was the system.
You called it a national
intelligence application, is the police database.
NIA, National Intelligence
Application.
Okay, I got that. So they have this thing, and like, for example, if there was a domestic dispute in my house and the police turned up and we sit there and say, no, everything's good, officers, no trouble here, but the neighbours had called it in because they heard the TV coming or something, or indeed there was domestic abuse, whatever, that would be noted on that system like a policeman's notebook in the old days.
That's right. Yep. It's the time, date, and place, the imperative information needed in any circumstance. Yep. So that goes on to your NIA file. So you all got a file.
That could be for the most mundane things. You could be a witness and you'd be noted?
Yes. Yep.
Now, people often ask for their police files. I'm just going off at a tangent while it occurs to me. As I understand it, when you ask for your police files, they don't give you the national, National Intelligence Application. They don't hand that across because it's not part of your, quote, police file.
Yeah.
Is that true?
Yes.
Wow. Because very hard to get through your life without some or other interaction with the police, right?
For sure. Yes.
So potentially everyone's in there.
Yes, even if you go on to the police assistance, to help a cop in trouble, your details are therefore recorded and retained in your NIA file.
Of course, in the old days, a policeman's notebook couldn't be accessed nationally in seconds.
No.
And probably sat in a drawer somewhere, and it didn't mean much when a policeman was making notes, unless that information was needed in court or needed to make a decision about whether to prosecute or to report what we knew of the accident. But this, every interaction now is in a database and searchable.
Yes. Yes. And you're relying on the honesty or the intelligence of the officer who's entering the information to put the right facts in. So if they've gone off on a tangent, then you've got no way of correcting it.
Because I'm just doing a hypothetical scenario. I've got the TV going loud, say, and there's a big fight on the TV. The neighbours hear a woman screaming, say, oh, that's Rodney Hyde beating his wife up. Call the police. The police turn up. My wife says, no, there's nothing going on here. She's got no visible signs of distress or damage. But the policeman says, oh, that's that Rodney Hyde guy, right? I always thought he was a bit suspect. And you just note that you were called out. There was no obvious distress, but you were suspicious. There was a hint, and you write something slightly untoward there, right? I don't even know that's happened.
That's right.
But I'm now flagged in a database as a person that is suspected or indeed has been alleged or indeed there has been a complaint about, all of which is true. Domestic abuse. Because I was suspected. There was a complaint. And that's in the database. And I'm completely innocent. That could wreck a political career. No one knows about this, Brian, do they?
No. In my case, I had no idea whatsoever, nor did my alleged victim.
Tell us how you got on to finding out about this thing, because it is a horrendous story, catch-22, enemy of the state. I mean, it's just shocking. How did you come across it?
29th of January 2014, up to that point, I'd been 30 years as a taxi driver in Wellington. And prior to that, I had 10 years in the police force. But on that date, a senior man of the police, NZTA, who is the policeman of the taxi industry, first of all, two guys came up to my taxi on a taxi rank and removed my taxi license from me. And they couldn't tell me why, gave me a phone number of this guy in Christchurch and telling me to ring him. And immediately the taxi company had to shut me down on their computer system, so therefore I couldn't work. I went back to my taxi office and they... one of the managers arranged a lawyer for me, and I went and saw him on the following 2 days later, 31st of January 2014.
And let's get a context here, Brian. It's a struggle even at this point. You'd been driving a taxi for how long?
30 years.
And never had a problem?
No. No convictions, nothing.
You're sitting there going about your work. Two strangers from NZTA, were they, I guess?
Yes. Yeah, both ex-cops.
Come up to you and say, we're taking your, they flash an identification, I guess, at you?
Yes, yeah.
We're immediately taking your taxi license, so your 30-year job is over at that point, for that day at least.
Yep.
Okay, I'm with you now. Carry on.
Then that was on a Wednesday, the 29th of January. On the Friday, I contacted this lawyer and also contacted the guy, the top man of the NZTA policing unit. We arranged a meeting at the lawyer's office in Parirua the following Friday, the 31st. And it was at that meeting that this senior man, he was an ex-cop himself, a detective senior sergeant in police for 30-odd years. And he told me, we've got evidence, or police have told me, that that you had made contact with a young person who was 15 years old a number of years ago, but he didn't give me any affirmative date. He said to me, I want you to name that person. He said, I don't know the person's name.
I'm sorry to laugh over such a tragic thing, but this is out of a horror show already.
Yes. And
I'm sorry. I apologize for laughing, Brian.
That's right. So he said, I want you to name that person. And then he said, I can't even tell you who. He said that the information to police was given to police by a psychologist. And he didn't know the name of that psychologist either. Now, going forward a bit, I later learned that he knew both names, but he was trying to entrap me into naming anyone else other than the name he had to prove.
Oh, I see.
Prove the point that I was a predatory pedophile, not just a pedophile.
Goodness me.
So, So, anyway, moving on, he said, we're going to give you one of two options. You can go to a judge, go before a judge and challenge my decision because he stripped me of my rights. He said, you're not going to drive again until, one, you've gone before a judge. And if you go to a judge, police will send me a file, or you can go before, you can have a psychological evaluation by an NZTA-approved psychologist at your own expense. And that could take up to 3 months. And the lawyer that was supposed to be representing me confirmed that fact. He said, I've just had a case similar, and it took me nearly 3 months to get a lawyer because they're so busy. To get a psychologist because they're so busy. But I knew from my police experience, a judge wasn't going to investigate the evidence that police had. So I opted for the psychologist option. And that eventually took 6 weeks. And sure enough, that psychologist interviewed the alleged victim and that person's parents and myself. And from those interviews, he deduced that there was no offence, nothing happened.
Again, I just can't. Oh, I'm sorry to laugh. I don't know. It's so hysterically wrong that you just can't believe this, Brian.
The outcome of that was I had commitments like for rent and payments on my taxi, so I went and took a job at a local vineyard, and that would have given me 6 weeks' work. The psychologist said, look, this could take up to 6 weeks. So I went and got a job at the vineyard picking grapes, and I was enjoying it. I had 6 days there. Well, the contractor had hired me, kept telling me, bring your IRD number in. We need your IRD number. So in the third day, I got it to him, And 3 days later, the same contractor came to me and said, Brian, you're too old and too slow. We have to get rid of you. And I thought, well, that's strange. I'm just as same as everyone else, just as fast. Anyway, 6 weeks later, he put on a barbecue for all the pickers, and it was there he told these people, these other workers, that the owners of the vineyard had received information that I was a paedophile and they wanted me off their property. And that's why he said I was too old and too slow. And I made inquiries subsequent, and the information came from IRD either directly or through another agency, police or NCTA, who had contacted the vineyards and told them, this guy's a paedophile, get him off his work. So I got my taxi license back from the psychologist interviews, but now I had no taxi to drive because my taxi was repossessed. I immediately contacted Toyota Finance and said, look, this is my situation. We've got no option but to repossess your taxi. So that was it. I had my taxi license back, but no taxi to drive, and I've never worked since.
It's appalling. But you can also appreciate people because we have such a horror of paedophilia. If officials tell you that they suspect or know that someone's a paedophile, your instant reaction is to get the hell out of there, right? Get that person away from us. But that's what they were doing to you.
Yeah, well, that's...
A complaint had been made against you. Funnily enough, by someone not even party to your interaction with the supposed victim.
That's right.
That had gone on to the system. As soon as a psychologist, that the police accepted was the right person to be making this decision, he spoke to the supposed victim and his mother, and they said, there's nothing here. You yourself were never aware, were you, of any allegation?
No, this allegation was at that stage 12 years old, and I'd passed every annual police fit in those 12 years.
It was no. Of course, because you needed it for your taxi.
Yeah. So that was on the 13th year that they decided to declare that I was a paedophile.
And not only that, to walk up to you, not on the annual check, but to walk up you on a random day.
Yes.
Then you had this 6 week period, and the psychologist, if I'm correct, was at your expense.
Yes, $1,750.
Then you have the 6 weeks where you can't work. You've got to pay for your taxi hire purchase, whatever you call it, finance.
Yes.
You get to work at a vineyard. The owner of the vineyard gets told by a state agent, you've got a guy there that's a pedo. They understandably tell the contractor, get rid of that guy. The contractor is not wanting to accuse you of a heinous crime, so comes up with some excuse to ask you to leave. He is subsequently at a barbecue with his workers and your former work colleagues, and they say, oh, you know, what happened to that old guy that was working with us? Oh, well, we got wind that he was a pedo. Wow. You're now besmirched and defamed by those around you. You're unable to earn any money. You lose your car, which was your precise means of employment for 30 years. You get your taxi license back, but it's useless to you because you don't have a taxi. All the while, totally innocent, never been questioned, never had the allegation put to you other than through that psychologist that you employed. Have I summarized that accurately?
Yeah, for sure. The psychologist did, at my expense, $1,750, what Press should have done 13 years earlier. Exactly.
This is the most sinister and dangerous thing that can happen to a person. So sinister and so dangerous because, for example, a pupil could have a snitch on a teacher, a stepfather, someone could have a snitch on a police officer, a doctor, a nurse, Joe Blogs in the street. Make a complaint. Please go and have a look at it. Note it on the National Information Application Database. National Intelligence Database. I apologize. National Intelligence Application. And you're red stamped. You may not even know. You subsequently apply to work, as a gardener in a school, or to take your kids to a football match, and the school says, oh, we just need a background check. And you say, sure. Comes back to the school. Don't let this person near kids. Correct?
That's right, yeah.
And you get told some lame excuse that you're not needed, and there's a whole whispering thing around your community that you've been flagged for the police as unsafe around kids.
That's right.
It is swear word horrific. So you are now out of work. What did you do?
Well, I live very rural, very remotely from the nearest town, and luckily I living on a farm, renting a property on a farm, and the farm owners, knowing my situation, let me off rent free for 18 months on the condition that I painted all the three houses, three dwellings and wall shed and a whole lot of other buildings. If I painted all those, you know, they provided everything. I was living rent free. And by that time, in May 2013, I started getting the pension. So it wasn't so bad. But every agency that should have been helping me, they obviously had a flag on my file with every government department, whether it be WINS or IRD or whatever, red stamp warning. Now, the red stamp warning is the most despicable part. This ex-cop that handed me this piece of paper, the red stamp warning stated this person not to have unsupervised access to children, young people, or the more vulnerable members of society, no further information available. So that's all the information. The employer is handed that piece of paper and told to get rid of this person because whether it be a school teacher, a taxi driver or whatever, anyone that is required to have an annual police vet as a term of their, as a condition of their employment, they have to be vetted every year, school teachers, taxi drivers. They get handed this piece of paper, or the employer gets it, and they've got no idea what it's about because police haven't told them. All they've got to do is get rid of this person because police have said he's got a red stamp warning.
And if they ask the police, well, can you provide us any information, the police will say no.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
But surely your red stamp went away once you got the psychologist's report.
Well, it must have because I got my license back.
Yes. Someone less aware of the system, an ex-police officer who knows the ropes, they could be applying for jobs. You could be an electrician and wonder why you're not getting jobs with government departments, which make up possibly 50% of your work.
Yeah. Yep. They would have no idea why they were, there was a red flag on their file.
By the way, I had a lot of this also as an MP with messy divorces, where typically an ex-wife, and I mean, when I'm saying I had a lot of this, possibly 10 over 3 or 6 years, which is a lot, where in a messy divorce, the wife and the husband having an argument over access to the children, and the wife as a tactic, I have to say, oftentimes on the advice of their lawyer, would say, I suspect my ex was physically or sexually abusing the children. Make the complaint to the police, which is totally costless and has no consequence. And then I had a man who was sacked as an electrician because the company he worked with did a lot of work for the education department. Same thing, right?
Yep.
You didn't leave it there, though, because you thought that you would, I guess, seek some recompense and some accountability for the destruction of your livelihood. Investigated this red stamp business further, right?
Yes. I've been 10 years still investigating, and every day turning up new evidence of skullduggery that incriminates a lot of government departments that should be helping people, government investigative departments that should be helping victims like myself, are totally gagged. They can't do anything. They've been told not to do anything, such as IPCA, Privacy Commissioner. They all made so-called investigations, but then dismissed. Police did nothing wrong.
That's my experience as a member of parliament. My experience as a member of parliament, that the IRD and the police literally trump every other government department when it comes to an individual case, because they have such power and they have such access to information. I know MPs are scared of both, because you can imagine the IRD and the police can destroy an MP's career just by making an allegation, oh, we're investigating something. And government departments run a mile from a proper inquiry into police and IRD actions unless the complaint is of a politically correct narrative, if you know what I mean. Would that be your experience?
Definitely.
So a poor white guy living rurally ain't got a shot.
Definitely not. No.
A radical Maori or a woman, it favours them.
For sure. And I've been saying this all along. If I had been Maori, none of this would be happening to me.
No. Unless you are a Maori on the wrong side. For example, if you're an ACT MP Maori, you know what I mean?
Yes.
It's crazy. It's crazy. And I think people are waking up to this. Do you feel that, Brian?
I do. I honestly believe that, but it's taking a long time to wake people up that there are them and us races in this country. And
Would you have believed what happened to you could have happened to you previously to it happening?
I don't know. I don't think so, because I would have just gone into a police station, which I did on this occasion, and the cops at Wellington Central don't know what the hell I'm talking about. We can't help you. You'll have to contact the police commissioner or get hold of someone at police headquarters to help you. Well, I fired off hundreds, literally hundreds of emails pleading for help, and no one responds. It's just a wall is put up in front of you. But, I mean, that was the same with a lot of the government departments. No government department has ever interacted with me in relation to the red stamp warning crisis that destroyed me.
You think they still suspect you?
I don't think so. No. I doubt it.
Because the funny thing about you is, you could have just buried your head and got on with your life, because fighting it, I mean, you're keeping reminding everyone that you were in the system, if you know what I mean.
Yeah, I realise that, yeah.
And I mean, even coming on this show, it's like, oh, is he legit? But of course, you were 100% are, because if you weren't legit, you wouldn't be raising your head up.
For sure.
What keeps you going, Brian?
Truth and justice is probably the best two words to describe it.
The same thing that probably put you into the police to begin with.
Yeah, for sure. Right and wrong are two distinct, there's a barrier between them. And
Absolutely. You can't stand by when there's been a wrong.
For sure.
You have discovered other victims like yourself?
Yes, yeah. Initially, right at the beginning, police were answering all my OIAs I was sending to police headquarters, the police vetting service. And what I found was that the vetting service were rotating their managers fairly regularly, sergeant, senior sergeant, until right up until August 2013, when they put a superintendent in charge of the vetting service. And that sort of rang a bell for me, because a superintendent is a wasted talent if he's just policing a vetting service. But I lost my train of thought there. What are we
talking? Talking about other victims that you came.
Oh, sorry. Yes. I've located, initially, the very first OIA asked is how many red stamp warnings were issued. And I got a response back, 133 at the same time as mine. They were all dated the 13th of June, 2013. But they weren't all executed at that same time. But I've since found through other means, some people went straight to court or were persecuted, like a school teacher, for example, down the West Coast, who was persecuted by the Teachers' Council through an ex-cop that was put into that Teachers' Council disciplinary board for the sole purpose of making sure anyone who had a red stamp warning was never saw truth or justice or was persecuted, hounded. And that's what happened. This poor bugger down on the West Coast was, the police were executed a search warrant on his classroom while the class was in, they exited and took away his computer. Now, the local cops down there had already done a proper inquiry into the allegation made against them, but it didn't fit the police headquarters red stamp regime. So they sent in a team of cops from outside the area, and that caused friction between the local cops. And that went on for 18 months. This guy was persecuted. The locals, past and present students, whenever they saw him on the street, they would call out to him, pedo, you know, tormented them. And eventually they arrested him. We went to court and got off because police didn't have enough evidence. But he was persecuted all that time. His life was destroyed. And that was just another example.
This man took his life.
Yes.
I remember helping the young man that had the note on his thing, and that thought that everywhere you went at any stage, it could be made public that you were a paedophile.
Yeah.
And I wondered, as you do, what I would do in that circumstance. And I don't believe you should take your own life. I think it's a sin.
Exactly, yes.
But I thought I'd probably jump off the Auckland Harbour Bridge.
Well,
because it's such... I mean, having someone say murderer is one bit pedophile. That is so. And you're sitting there saying, no, I'm not.
Yeah.
Yes, you are. Everyone knows. And of course, the hatred we feel for people that hurt kids is so strong.
Yes.
That it overrides reason.
That's right.
It's not like that guy who was the eye surgeon. Did he murder his wife or did he not? Well, we don't know. We weren't there. Need to have a trial, need to look at it. Oh, well, may have done, but we can't prove it beyond reasonable doubt. So he goes free. And we think about that with respect to a murderer. But for some reason, when it comes to a pedo, or
yes,
a paedophile, someone can just make the allegation and people literally join in.
Exactly. Yeah. And
that poor teacher, the amazing thing to me is that he lasted 18 months with that level of humiliation.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
And these, I'm going to say it, these bastards that write this stuff on a file take no responsibility or accountability for the damage they do.
That's right. My observation is they've chosen paedophilia as a weapon of attack because you really got no defence. If police are making the accusation, then it must be true.
Of course. Of course, because we trust the police.
Yes. And the victim, even if they don't know the circumstances of where the allegation originated, well, what defence have they got? And that's what police were relying on in these red stamp warnings. They were hoping the accused, in this case me, would just go away and melt into the never never, because I'm going to be attacked forever.
Yes.
I'm labelled forever as a paedophile because police said you were.
Yes. Now let's come back to that. But just what one question of clarification. By the way, thank you for this interview, Brian, and thank you for being so calm and reasonable and going through it, because it can't be easy, right? Because this is your life.
Yes.
One thing is, all the dates, all the dates that you said, those 132 or 133 odd.
Yes.
They all went on the system on the same day. I'm thinking, am I right, that there was a system rolled over and the complaints were previous to that date, but they got rolled into a new system on that date. Would that be a fair assumption?
Yeah, I would say all the red stamp warning would have come into effect on that date.
Yes, right. They were historical complaints. It might have been a policeman's notebook. Now, here's the thing. I've said it previously, but this is also a potential political weapon. Because you can shut anyone up through the system, right?
Yes.
So, I don't know, Brian Tamaki causing a nuisance of himself.
Yep.
Upsetting the apple cart. If he gets too big for his boots, a government, or indeed an individual, but you'd want people on board to make it happen, and they're ready to believe it. You're ready to believe the worst of people you disagree with. I've noticed this in politics, by the way, that people will come up with the most horrendous stories of the Prime Minister of the day. And those that oppose that Prime Minister of the day, yeah, I know it's true. My hairdresser knows the guy that made the fish and chips for the guy. You know what I mean? And yet when it's a Prime Minister they support, they say, no, not true.
Yeah. Yeah.
So when you take someone like a controversial figure, like Brian Tamaki, who brings out strong emotions of support and opposition, and in particular, strong opposition in the establishment, because here is a guy who is Maori, organising Maori, to oppose what's going on. So he's high on the establishment's enemy list. They could destroy him overnight.
Exactly.
They could do it to you. They did it to you. They could do it to me.
Yep.
And I'm not going to succeed with a big sign on my back, I'm not a paedophile wandering around town.
Exactly.
Terrifying. Are there any, what would be the change that would put justice back into the system?
I would say just treat everyone as equal. We're not. It's the pendulum swung a whole way to the other side, where if you are I can guarantee there were no Maoris affected with these 133 red stamp warnings that police say they issued. I can guarantee that. Well, I can't guarantee it, but I'm pretty adamant that that would be the case. And therefore, the justice system is punishing non-Maori to make it look like they're appeasing the Maori.
This is part of this equity drive, isn't it, to yes. sort of even out the statistics.
Yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And it's like the idea that, you know, there's this big squadron of white supremacists in the country that the intelligence agencies have to be rooting out in the wake of the Christchurch mosque attack. It became a big thing that there were white supremacists under the bed sort of thing.
Yeah.
Should we be asking the police for this information on ourselves under the Privacy Act?
Yeah, but it costs you $70. And most
no. people,
most people can they can't afford that. You know, that's
but I've done lots of Privacy Act requests. I've never been charged in my life.
You mean Official Information Act? Or?
No, well, it's the equivalent of the Official Information Act, but you use the Privacy Act because it's more powerful, because right. there's a lot of reasons you can hold information, official information back. There's very limited reasons that you can hold private information back.
Right,
it's
right,
about
right.
you.
Yeah.
So if it's about me, I'd put in a Privacy Act request, and the Privacy Commissioner, I've always felt, maybe this is not true these days, was always less busy than the Ombudsman dealing with the multitude of Official Information Act requests. I might do that. I might be scared what's there.
Yeah, yeah.
But you think they'd want to charge me?
No, well, that's on the police website. If you want your information, it's going to cost you $70.
I must have a look at that. How funny. Gosh, they're tricks, aren't they?
Well, now again, it's like, you see, like accusing a person of being a pedophile, he's not going to kick up a fuss about that in case there is something in the background years ago. But the same thing, the person's not going to request this information if we charge them a certain amount of money. This is the way it's gone. The whole system is just you've got to roll with the punches, or else if you fight, then the punches get harder. That's the sad part about our new country.
I'm just actually on their site now, and they say this, right? The New Zealand police may release any information they hold. This is if I ask for a vet, right? So I'm a school, and I'm asking for a prospective gardener, and I ask for a vet, and they go through, obviously, the conviction history and demerit points, and then it says, any interaction had with New Zealand police considered relevant to the role being vetted, including investigations that did not result in prosecution.
Yeah.
Unbelievable, right?
Yeah.
And you sign up. You sign up for that because you have to consent to them disclosing that information.
That's right.
And the funny thing is, there's a thing called the clean slate. And that means your conviction history may be expunged, but not that interaction, I would guess.
No, well, that's right, yeah.
How's that a double standard, right? If you're convicted of pedophilia, there's a fake allegation.
Yeah.
Oh,
yeah.
What a world we live in.
It is sad. But these shakers and movers obviously have got a reason for doing it. And yes, I listen to all the different theories and that, but I don't get caught up on that. But it's just I'm facing the here and now, and I want to try and help the people. See, the thing is, a lot of these people think they're the only person. They don't know what I know, and I can't contact them all. I'd love to get hold of them. And
hopefully this show helps.
Yeah, yeah. I found
Would you mind if we put your details up with our replay?
Yeah, yeah.
So that anyone that wanted to could contact you?
Yeah, for sure. Especially if it relates to the period, 2010 onwards.
Yes.
But I'm interested in anything previous too. I just love it. Love to hear that information. And,
Just looking on that site again, the police helpfully say this, right? If you require a copy of your criminal record, you can obtain this from the Ministry of Justice. But, of course, that's not the information. If you'd applied for your criminal record, it would come up zip.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
And then they say at the bottom here, the police vetting service does not, in quotes, approve or decline vetting requests or give recommendations on suitability for employment. We only provide information to agencies to allow them to make an informed decision.
Yeah.
Isn't that terrible? And, of course, all the way through, they have that, what's that great phrase, plausible deniability. The person that handed it across to the NZTA or handed it across to the vineyard owner, oh, well, this is what we're to do. It was in the system. I was obligated. It wasn't me that put it on there. You know, it just tricks back. And it's basically malicious gossip.
Yes.
And any police officer worth their salt in their training would know about the standards of evidence.
For sure. Yeah. Hearsay.
Brian, I salute you, sir.
Thank you. Yeah, I'll just want to say something. Hearsay is inadmissible in every court of the land. And but not the Waitangi Tribunal.
No, or the police vetting system.
Yeah.
Brian, I wish you every success. Please keep in touch. I know we'll get a lot of feedback about your case. And as I said, I have experienced that with constituents. So it's not unknown to me. And you realize that systems that we're in, people we put much great faith in New Zealand has been abused. And we think we're not corrupt like other nations because we have no mechanism of exposing it.
That's right, yeah.
Thank you for your double service, Brian. First as a police officer, working to protect us, and second as a man on a mission to explain what happened to you, what has happened to others, some of whom who no longer can speak for themselves, and to stop it happening. And I'm sure you're right that you know of maybe a couple of hundred. There'll be a lot more.
For sure.
Okay, Brian, you can send us a text, everyone, 2057. You can email me, inbox@RadleyCheckRadio. I thank you for listening. We're truly blessed, are we not, with the people that come forward to share their story and tell us their lives. And here is a man served as a police officer. He's not a man that allows his life to be ruined because he gets on with it. But they took away his job. They took away his car. They did it by taking away his taxi license. And when they came to give it back, it was too late. And Brian Mullane did nothing wrong. It's New Zealand, our country. Thank you for listening.
The RCR Shop has great gift ideas. From great-looking tees, hoodies, caps, tote bags, bumper stickers, and more. The RCR Shop is now open at www.realitycheck.radio/shop.